This is an ABC podcast.
This is Niche and Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinirao Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Welcome to Niche and Footy, and a special Talofalava and Malo to our Samoan listeners who got a few nods in the Rugby World Cup team of the tournament with Ireland's Bundy R. Key and All Blacks Richie Mo'unga and Player of the Year Adi Savea. Huge congrats to those lads. But as always, welcome to our Niche and Footy listeners. This is the spot to keep up with all our Rugby League and Rugby Union Pacifica talent. My name's Sam Wykes, and with me, after a week of jet setting around the Pacific, is Tinirao Arona T.
Kia ora, Sammy,
Welcome back.
Thank you.
I missed you so much.
Oh, it's good to be back.
I actually missed you.
I missed you as well, mate.
Even Nisian knowledge, I missed you for that too.
Yeah, I heard Sefa gave you an easy question to try and even up that score. Speaking of Sefa, thank you again, Joseph Paulo, for stepping in last week. I thought you were unreal. Definitely better than my or our first time, Sammy. So hopefully
don't be too hard on yourself.
We'll get him back on the show soon. But Sammy, plenty of news to catch up on. We've had the Pacific Championships over the weekend. We also had the Rugby World Cup Grand Final. And later on our show, we'll be hearing from someone who has played in the Rugby World Cup for Samoa and our first ex-All Black, Lima Sopoanga.
This is a big get. I've played against Lima. What a talent he is. But he's also your...
First cousin. Reporting live from Japan.
He's playing for my old club too, the Shimizu Blue Sharks.
Yes, he just travelled straight from the World Cup over to Japan, and he posted a photo in economy seats. And I said, it's okay because your short legs, you know, they'll fit perfectly in them.
It's business no matter what. Don't worry.
But looking forward to having a chat to Leams.
Moment of the week.
Yes, our moment of the week this week, again, from PNG. It was all happening over there, and T's going to tell us more about it. But what about how special this was? Micah Siva. We're used to hearing that in the crowds at Parramatta Stadium as he goes over for his famous tries, but that was there in PNG. Couldn't even get to his bus so they could travel out of training. He was absolutely mobbed over there.
Mate, coming from PNG last week, they live and breathe rugby league. And them locals, they're so passionate about every rugby league player. And Micah Sevo is a star in their eyes. Even when he ran out against the Cook Islands last week, they were all screaming Sevo. But I also meant I managed to listen to our episode of Niche and Footy. And if you wanted to catch that one, last week's episode, make sure you can listen to it wherever you get your podcast with Joseph Paulo. But that moment of the week was when you had Brad Takarangi's video.
The Cook Island singing, yep.
Oh, man. It just gives me tingles down my spine when you listen to this video, because there's actually a really cool story that goes behind this clip and when the Cook Island men's and women's went to this village in Port Moresby. It's a village named Hanuabara. The chairman of the Cook Islands purposely took the men's and women's team there because 150 years ago, Cook Island missionaries actually founded the village of Hanuabara. And all those locals singing Cook Island songs were passed down over the years. They said that when the players and the staff arrived, there was a light rain that came over the team, and they said that was their ancestors blessing them. And speaking to a couple of the team members and staff members, they said that was by far one of the best feelings and moments of their rugby league careers. So, a really cool opportunity for our Cook Island men's and women's to experience.
My name is Dan Lil, former Samoa player. I'm here on Niche and Footy with T and Sam here. I love your work, and God bless you all.
Over the weekend, we had the Pacific Championships. First game, was the Kiwis versus the Kangaroos, where we had one of the best haka moments where the Kiwis faced the Kangaroos and just went at it. So the Kiwis, led by James Fisher-Harris, was one fierce haka. And then at the end of it, they just stood their ground, and then the cat looked up and the Kangaroos are just standing there. And it was one of their moments where it's like...
They didn't back down. They didn't step away.
No one backed down. No one stepped away. And then you could see in James Fisher-Harris's and the Kiwis boys, they're like, okay, we're going to do this. So they just stand there, eyeing each other out about 20 meters apart. And it gets to the point, it's like, who's going to break first? Who's going to break first? And then James Fisher-Harris led their team, started walking forward. And then all the Kiwi boys were like, all right, let's do this. They go straight to the Kangaroos. And I'm thinking they're going to go shake hands. Nah, they go nose to nose and just stare each other in the eyes for another 10, 20 seconds and then respectfully shake hands after that moment. But I thought that was, it kind of set the tone for that game. But what happened next probably let all the air out of the balloon.
just on that, I think I would have walked straight to Harry Grant if that was me in there. But obviously, yeah, with the scoreline. What happened in your eyes?
Well, the action I was talking about was the kickoff from Jermaine Isakul. He goes, kicks it off, and we're like, yes, here we go. Someone's going to run it straight back into the Kiwis pack. And he kicks it dead on the full. So
too much emotion.
Too much emotion, too excited. But I just thought the way the Kangaroos handled the Kiwis' strengths. So you look at the Kiwis' strengths, you have the 1-2 punch in Samoa Moses Leota, James Fisher-Harris, who have won back-to-back-to-back grand finals for the NRL. You also have Joseph Tapine, that pack that the Kiwis have. The Kangaroos managed to handle that. Along with managing the Kiwi strengths, they also had a experienced spine. You know, they have Ben Hunt, who's, 33 years old. You have Daly Cherry-Evans, 34 years old. Then you have Tedesco at the back, who's also in his 30s. But the three of them understanding how to turn opportunities into points, which probably led to, you know, Kangaroo's first try, Valentine Holmes, where Tedesco puts in a nice grubber for old Val.
Now it's played to Hunt, comes to the right. Centre fielder Cherry-Evans. He goes further right to Tedesco. Puts in a step kick. Coming through is Valentine Holmes. He gets there. Did he get it down before the dead ball line? He thinks he did. Adam G thinks he did. And Valentine Holmes opens the scoring after 8.5 minutes from a brilliant step kick by James Tedesco.
The Kiwis forward pack, they went at it for the first 10, 15 minutes. You know, Fisher-Harris, Tapine had outstanding games, but just wasn't enough to get the Kiwis on the scoreboard or like close enough to then eventually take over the game. But there was a nice moment for Mulitalo where he had a real good battle against Valentine on the wing, but he ended up coming in one position to the center to be able to jump over closer to the sticks away from Val to get over for a nice try as well.
Now it's going to be played on the last. The dummy half nickel Klugstar goes left. Hughes puts in the kick near the goal line. Up goes Staggs. Kiwis come down with it and score. They have it. I believe it's Mulitalo taking the catch for New Zealand. Then next to the post, he gets the try from a perfect Jerome Hughes kick.
It was also good to see our good friend Fa'amanu Brown, one of our first guests on Nisian Footy, get over for a nice try for the Kiwis as well. But once again, the Kangaroos were just too strong, too clinical. Over in Papua New Guinea, we had the Fiji Bati take on PNG Kumuls. Fiji Bati getting up 43-18. They did concede an early try from Alex Johnston over in the corner. But after that, it was all Fiji Bati. I thought they took full control of this game. It was actually really... a bit different to see those friendly Fijians play with a bit of fire.
I was going to ask that. Is that the first time you've probably seen the Fijians play a little bit more direct? Because leading into that try for Big Tui's try, it just seemed like they were just punching that front runner and just getting the quickest play the balls I've ever seen.
Well, when you think of the PNG Kumuls, you think aggressive, you think granite, you think they're coming at you hard. The only way that the Fiji Bati could have matched him was do it exactly like, the same back to the return serve. And that was led by their two props, Tui Kamikamitha and also Kingi Vuniyayawa. You know, those two were outstanding to start the game, really set the platform, but then opened up that space for that all-star backline. When you've got Micah Sivo, who scored a nice, like, two great tries, one where he took an intercept and ran 90 metres to score the try.
10 metres out from the goal line. Played to Apapi, to the right to Bellin, 10 out. Short ball, Cole Laybot got past one. Throws the ball straight to Sivo. He's over the 30, the 40, over halfway, over the 40. See ya! An intercept. Sivo says again, Vanaka Vakalevu for that pass, Kyle Laybutt, and races 90 metres to score his second try in what, a minute and a half?
I did mention last week on another show, Nija Daily, where the Cook Islands almost took it to the Fiji Butty, but they had a week's week's extra preparation when they lost to the Kumuls the week before, understanding the wind, understanding the field. And I feel like that's what Fiji Butty done. They got that experience from that Cook Island game, almost lost, and then they just took PNG to the sword.
Two different teams, though, from last week to this week, the Fijians. Even Sivo, he looked a little bit quiet compared to, you know, this week's game. He was on fire, but, yeah, outstanding performance from the Fiji Butty.
I really like their captain, Tui Kamikamitha.
Yeah.
Mate, he just the way that he carries himself and then the way that he plays really sets the platform for, like I said, that all-star back line. But that's going to be another warm-up game because they'll be playing each other in the Pacific Bowl Grand Final this Sunday. So really interesting to see how PNG turn things around over this week.
Oh, so they'll play each other this week for the GF. So similar to the Kiwis will play Australia for that GF, this is the Pacific Bowl one.
Yep.
Oh, PNG will win then. They've Fiji, they've played their grand final.
I don't know. They looked good. So it's going to be a good game to watch. In other news, we also had Tonga go down to England in their second match of their tri-series over in England, 14-4. We did see Kola have a nice touch set up from Hopewadi to score a try in the corner. But, you know, when you go over to England, I know it's a tough place to play, especially when you're playing at feels like Huddersfield, where that rugby league field, it's actually made to play soccer on. So they share it with, I think it's Huddersfield Town, where the in goals are shorter. You've got the rain, the dew right on top of the ground, so you can't really go round.
Is it the same width?
68 metres to be exact, it's meant to be, and it feels like 64-ish.
With the weather and the...
But then you've got the weather, so yeah. The sidelines are extra defender. So yeah, it feels a lot more narrow. So going forward, you know, they've got the third game to try and make up for it. I'm thinking run forward, run hard, run straight, and try and generate some quick play of the balls and try not to think go round.
It's Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinira Arona.
The Rugby Union World Cup Grand Final.
The GF.
Some great players stood out for you.
Yeah, mate, it was it wasn't really the spectacle. You're hoping for that free-flowing running rugby that we would have loved. The conditions were really heavy, you know, raining, impacted the pace, probably also the ref as well, impacted the pace of the game.
Wait, before you go on, I remember you giving your predictions last week.
Yeah, it was close, wasn't I?
Was it close?
I think so.
Let's have a look.
Was it? I think if New Zealand will win, it will be by 1 point. Ooh. If South Africa win, it'll be 13 plus. That's close.
That was completely wrong, mate.
Mate, it was close. There was 1 point in it in the game. How about that? Give me half, something.
Nah, nothing. That was awful.
Well, on my predictions, obviously I know nothing about the game of rugby union. That's why I spent my time on the bench. But it's not about me. It's about the Rugby Union World Cup Grand Final. As I said, rain impacted the pace of the game. The referee as well with a couple of decisions. But it was dominated by kicking from both teams. I thought it was actually pinpoint, though. Like, you've got to play you have to play to those conditions. You can't afford not to. Otherwise, you know, it'll be like what you said in that Tonga and England game in the rugby league, where the, you know, the in goals become shorter. There's going to be a lot more drop balls. So you have to play to those conditions. And both teams did that really well, applied a lot of aerial pressure. And, you know, the All Blacks still tried to play with the ball as well. They still tried to, you know, chance their arm a bit with their width, We saw Geordie Barrett do a nice little flick ball at the back to Richie Mo'unga. Just didn't quite come off because I think in dry footy, they probably would have beat him with pace, but because it was just that little bit slower, the defence of South Africa were able to read that.
Was it also the other Barrett brother that put the little chip kick over for Artie and he waited for the bounce, just had the wrong bounce of the ball?
Yeah, it was. And that was at a crucial time as well for that to happen. Like, if he gets that bounce of the ball, Artie, because he was chasing through, it was nice vision from Barrett to be able to see that there was no one in the boot behind the ruck to be able to get that. But yeah, just didn't quite get the bounce. So it was a bit of the story of the Kiwis game, really. And then, T, I just want to bring up with you, what have I always been saying? If you're going to win a test match in rugby union, you know, what are some non-negotiables? It's absolute must at that level to help put you in the right position to win the game.
So if you're going to win a Rugby World Cup, you don't need to score a try.
That's true. That's very true.
South Africa didn't score a try to score.
I know.
To win the Rugby World Cup.
So what's that telling you?
What a boring sport.
No, but just get this. Get into the nuts and bolts. Get in the detail of it. Well, so with no tries, what do you need?
You need to build pressure. You need ball possession.
You need to kick goals.
Sorry.
You need to kick your goals.
If you're not going to score tries, you need to kick goals.
You need to kick goals, okay? And you need how many on the field?
15.
15. What happened to the All Blacks?
South Africa had 16.
Did they? No, we can't bag the refs out. They're doing their best. They're doing their best. And I'd say 17 if you had the TMO, but anyway.
But yes, discipline.
Yeah, discipline. So look, a yellow card to Tongan Shannon Frizzell 2 minutes into the game, and then Captain Sam Kane, just before half time, you know, gets a yellow card, but then upgraded to a red card. You know,
how
for that head
on. How does that work? Yellow cards get upgraded to red cards. And
well, the idea of it was to try and speed up the game. So just in case they get it wrong, they'll go, you know what, we've looked at all the angles. It wasn't quite as bad as what we thought. So that way he can come back on the field. Obviously, it was still a slow game. Like, it hasn't sped it up at all. But what I will say about the Rugby World Cup in that match as well, it's intense. It is seriously, one mistake will lead to something that's going to cost your team. It's the smallest of margins, and that's what that game showed. And South Africa, you know, that's a masterstroke from their coach, Rassie Rasmus, and his coaching staff and what they've built over this eight-year cycle. Because he said in one of his press conferences really early when he took on the job, South Africa will be known for winning World Cups. And that was his bold statement when he took on the job, and he's not wrong. That's all they did. And you look at their run into the grand final. Quarter final was 29-28 when they beat France, host nations. Semi-final, 16-15 over England. And then the grand final, 12-11 over New Zealand. Like, to win by 1 point in three massive games at a World Cup, like, that shows you how well they deal with pressure. Like, it's an outstanding achievement. And they are now back-to-back champs. They're the first rugby nation to win 4 Rugby World Cups.
That's unreal, man.
So, very impressive. And obviously, it's not the spectacle that we would have liked, but at the same time, like, it is a massive achievement for them, like that country of South Africa, to be able to, you know, win like that, and it unites a nation. Sia Kolisi, the captain for the Springboks, he gets to lift that trophy. He's pretty much a leader of South Africa, not just his rugby union team. He enjoys that pressure of having the nation behind him and making sure he does the job. But, you know, the All Blacks, hats off to him, because they were sort of the underdogs leading into this tournament by their own standards, and they were still in it to win the game. They still had moments to win that game. They missed 2 goals, one penalty goal from Barrett, one conversion from Richie Mo'unga, and you talk about a disallowed try, as well as playing with 14 men pretty much the whole game. So, yeah, that's an impressive display from the All Blacks. And I think it's going to, you know, they're going to go into a new phase with Scotty Robinson, Razor Robinson, who will take over. That's Ian Foster's last game. But, yeah, absolute, you know, I think it was, for all the teams, you know, from a Rugby World Cup wrap-up, I think it was an outstanding tournament, especially for our Pacific brothers over there.
And what about our old mate, Australian Wallabies, coach.
Oh, are we going there? Well,
yeah, a bit of news just come out.
Well, look, I said right from the start that with Eddie at the helm, it's either going to go north or south. What's further than south? You just keep digging. I don't know, but obviously not great news for the Wallabies with Eddie Jones resigning or coming to a mutual agreement that he will no longer be the Wallabies coach. 5-year deal that he signed. How long did he last, T?
5 months.
Close, 10 months. How many games did he win?
One.
Two. All against Tier 2 nations. Didn't beat one Tier 1 nation.
Are there any positives that come out of...
They get to start fresh.
There you go. Clean sheet.
Clean sheet. That's us in the rugby.
Talo Falava, my name is Annalise Seal, and you're listening to Nijan Footy.
Keeping us up to date with all the women's footy news, we have our good friend, PNG Orchid superstar and North Queensland Cowboys NRLW representative, Shelley Long, on The Long Story Short.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Shelley, the Pacific Championships have continued this weekend. We've seen the Kiwi Ferns beat the Gillaroos 12-6. What caught your eye?
Oh, I thought it was an incredible game. New Zealand finally broke their 7-year drought. And I thought there was quite a few errors and quite a few times where New Zealand was defending on their back foot and defending their try line. And I thought they did really well to keep composed. And, you know, they were chasing points a little bit in that first half. But Mele Hilfanga again, right at halftime, scores over the try line. And it put them at 6-6. So incredible game to watch, incredible feeling, and obviously super happy for the New Zealand girls and what they've achieved this year.
Yeah, the Gillaroos, they made a fair few errors, which, you know, not common when it comes to the Gillaroos. But you mentioned Mele Hufanga, and there were a couple great Tongan women on that field, Yasmin Clydesdale, but Mele was outstanding.
Yeah, definitely. I thought Mella was incredible. She did the same move she's been doing all season and they still weren't able to defend it. She scored that same way in their first game. So I think Gillaroos will definitely be looking to learn on how to defend Mella Hufanga. I think everyone in NRLW will be learning how to defend that move. But I thought the Gillaroos, they just couldn't nail their opportunities like they have, like we've seen them do before. And I think they'll definitely learn from that.
Well, based off your defensive efforts last week, do you have any tips on how to stop Mele?
I don't even know. I think it was a tough one. I think they really overcompensated on trying to defend Tyler Nathan Wong, and that's what opened up that gap. But I think it's so hard when you've got someone as powerful as Mele. She's definitely someone that you've almost got to lie on the ground and hope to trip her.
Just a speed hump for her.
Because she's just so powerful.
Can you fact check something for me? T came back and said he was doing a lot of work and he was busy the whole time, but... Well, we heard other sources just saying he was just there on a bit of a holiday, but obviously he did that one bit with you. Can you confirm he actually did work over there?
I don't know. He went missing for a little while there.
See?
No, tell them about the presentation that I done to Honor. It wasn't even me. It was Nita.
Again, it wasn't you.
Nah.
I looked the part, but...
He did a lot of work. I saw him in the hallways quite a few times, chit-chatting, so I think he was busy.
Player engagement.
By the looks of it, he was busy.
Yeah, well, apparently the business credit card bills through the roof with coffees and lunches.
You've been giving him some tips, Sam.
I have, actually. Hey, you got to learn
have
from somewhere.
Have you been taking him your way from going to Fiji all the time?
Yep. Shelley, you're supposed to be on my side. Let's move on to the games.
Hey, Shelley, so with the Pacific Championships, what do you think about the format? I know that you girls and also Fiji, Cook Islands and Samoa, you've only got to play one game. We didn't get to see a final with the Kiwis and the Gillaroos. So what are your thoughts on the format of the women's game?
I would definitely love to see more of the smaller nations getting games. I think it was a bit upsetting when you see sort of Australia and New Zealand getting multiple games, but the nations of the Pacific Championships only getting one. I think the growth of those teams and the ability that those teams were able to showcase definitely needs more games. You saw Fiji Bari come out on the weekend against the Kumuls, and everyone, based off the performance that the Kumuls had against the Cook Islands, you saw that Fiji Bari came out and absolutely destroyed them on the weekend. So I think if a team can stay in camp for longer and build after game, I think there'll definitely be better performances and a lot of teams will learn. You see, like, New Zealand, the women's team got to stay in camp for the last 3 weeks. After their performances, they just kept building and growing, and they've just gotten better and better. And they lost against Australia in the first game, but come the second one, they've done an outstanding job and won. So I definitely think those more games behind each nation's backs would definitely make them get better and stronger as one as well.
Well, there you have it, T. You've got some work to do in the RLPA space. You're the man for the job to be able to take this feedback, sort it out, mate.
I've got one question for T.
Yes.
Now, I went to the dinner with the Prime Minister, and he said the next games are going to be in Fiji. Have we heard any updates on this one?
The nations.
Can you tell me anything?
Well, the nations have actually been told that they're planning on taking the games to Fiji. But I was just thinking, because Fiji beat Papua New Guinea Kumuls, and if they win again this week in the final, does Fiji go up into the Pacific Cup with the Pacific Championships, and they go into playing the Kiwis and Australia, which they're not going to have their home men's team playing there. So I know they are planning to, but I guess it depends on the results this weekend. That's my guess anyway.
In other news, World 15s has been happening the last couple of weekends. The Wallaroos beat a tough France side, 29 points to 20. Eva Kapani was absolutely outstanding for the Wallaroos on the weekend. The Wallaroos will now take on Wales on the 3rd of November in Auckland. So not only that, the Black Ferns made a great comeback as well after their loss against France last week. They came up against Wales and had an incredible win, 70 points to 7. Ruby Tui, she scored an incredible 4 tries in that first half of that game. She's outstanding. I don't know if you guys saw this, but one of the male players actually said, got asked a question about who had scored the most points. And they were expecting him to say a male player, but he actually said Ruby Tui, because she had scored the most in both codes, which was pretty incredible to see a female excelling so well in that sport.
Yeah, she's an absolute freak. I love watching her play. Handy footwork. But there was also another game as well, heavyweights Kazakhstan versus Fiji. Can you give us an update on that one?
So Fiji beat Kazakhstan 118 points to nil. How incredible is that scoreline? Like, Fiji is absolutely on fire.
Actually, Sammy, which players stood out for you for Kazakhstan?
The Kazakhstan women's... what's her name? I think it's Mirana Balashova, the blindside flanker. Mate, she was all over the ball, outstanding.
Good defence.
Great defence.
118.
Ah, you know, look, Kazakhstan's building. We all started somewhere. I've lost, my biggest scoreline was 97-3. So,
hey, at least there were more tries scored here than there was in the Rugby World Cup Grand Final.
You're not wrong there.
But also, talking about World 15s, South Africa versus Samoa on the weekend as well. And South Africa beat them 33 points to 7.
This is the hard-hitting questions of Boys Don't Know. Shelley, this week I want to know, or we want to know, about pre-match meals. What do you have for your pre-match meal? Because obviously there's some science behind it. Well, you don't eat 3 hours before the game. But with the girls' game being usually midday? Like, what do you have?
With a midday game, normally it's just pretty much breakfast, and it's breakfast pretty early so that the stomach settles. I'll eat about, like, toast. I'll have bacon, hush brown, peanut butter on my
plate. Is that full English?
Would you eat that
very
much?
Like, yeah, I eat that much. And to be honest, we have mainly like a big dinner the night before. And if I'm at home, I'm eating a Domino's pizza before I play.
No wonder why you got the stomach bug before the game. Holy heck.
That's carbo loading.
Wow.
No, but so it depends. Everyone has a different diet, and I've always eaten the same things before a game. And so I'm the type of person that I've been eating that for a while, so I probably won't change it.
I agree.
But, you know, my friends, they like their salad, their meat. I have one friend who's a vegetarian the night before. So they all do their own things.
Righto. Hey, well, that's mind blown. Absolutely outstanding, Shelley. Just when we thought we knew you, we didn't. And that bit of information is gold. So, hey, we look forward to next week. As always, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks, guys.
Challenge of the week.
Yes, our challenge of the week this week is going to be a little bit different because T was obviously on a holiday.
On tour. Working.
Was on holiday. I calls it working, a working mate. Experience, but he's on holiday going from his Instagram photos. So this week we had to challenge Lima to a guessing game. So stick around for that because it's a good one that I relate to.
Next week. So remember when I went to Fiji to play the Cavite Silk Tales?
And yes.
You got me to do a voice record on a bit of a tour diary. This week, we're off to the Solomon Islands, you and I are.
We're going touring.
On a business trip.
Touring.
To do a bit of recording for that Pacific Sports Show for the Pacific Games over in Solomon Islands.
Yes.
So I want you to create a little tour diary in the Solis.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an easy one. Easy.
Nesian footy.
Sammy, we've managed to get one of the big guns on our show, our first ex-All Black. He helped guide the Highlanders to their first Super Rugby title in 2015 and 16 caps for the All Blacks. He's played in the UK, in France as well, and now about to start his new journey in Japan, and I believe at your old club.
The old Blue Sharks.
Yes.
The Blue Sharks.
But coming straight off the back of the 2023 World Cup, representing the Manu Samoa, we have Lima Sopoanga. Lima.
What an intro. How good's this? Wow.
Thanks for the intro, boys. Appreciate it.
All good. Thanks for joining us here on Nesian Footy. For all our listeners, do you want to give us a bit about your background on your culture?
Yeah, so obviously half Samoan and half Cook Island. Yeah, dad's Samoan. Mum's Cook Island and second generation, born in Wellington. I got five brothers and sisters. And for those who don't know, me and T, our mums are sisters. So
yes, yeah. I was going to say that for you to tell our listeners. Actually, our mothers are both together in the Cook Islands right now. They're there, sadly, their older sister, Auntie Tedekinal, passed away. So they're over there. So sending love to our family over in Matavera, over in Rarotonga.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be over there right now, eh, bro? But there'd be a lot of scraps going on, man.
Yeah, we always keep
between
ourselves.
Between you and T.
We always keep ourselves. No, we actually had a lot of scraps when we were younger. Oh, Lima was a bit of a bully.
Well, you know, just on that, how does it feel, Lima, to probably have the better genes over T in terms of the footy sets? How does that make you feel?
Oh, it's good, eh? Growing up, you know.
It's good, eh? Not even shying away from it.
You used to tell me rugby's soft. Nah, rugby's soft, man. No, that's shit game. But, it's good. You know, like I remember growing up and used to go over to Aussie sometimes and bro, still running hard. He's like, this is how you make it. And this guy's playing like SG ball or whatever it is. You know, he's got his Pampers gears on. And I was just like a little kid, like, whoa, man. That's going to be me, bro. And he used to like just full on flog us, eh?
2015 was a huge year for yourself, you know, winning that first title for the Highlanders, but also being selected in the All Blacks. What was that moment like when you got the call up and every boy's dream is to become an All Black?
Yeah, it was crazy because I knew that the team was getting announced. I'll never forget this day. It was actually with one of our cousins, Danny, and we went out for brunch, and I was just like, the whole time I was like looking at the clock because it was getting announced on TV, so they didn't call you, and I was just so nervous. You know, everybody was sort of saying, bro, you're going to make it. You're going to get in the team. But you kind of don't want to believe it until you hear your name, you know? I was just like nervous. And then we ended up driving home, but we drove home at the same time that the team was getting announced. But I didn't want to sit and watch it anywhere. And then I just remember my phone just going off like, our family group chat, all my like mates group chats. They were just like, you did it, you made it. Right. And I was like, holy, like sitting in the passenger seat. And we got home and then I like turned to my cousin. And I was like, Danny, I made the All Blacks. And he was like, oh, and we just like started like losing it, like jumping around on the street. Like I was like a little kid, you know, like at Christmas, who got like a PlayStation for Christmas, you know. I was just like so pumped and so excited. And yeah, it was a moment I'll never forget, you know, like rang mum and dad and they had just come down to watch us play the Chiefs in the quarterfinals. So they were driving up back home to Wellington from Dunedin, which is like an 8-hour drive. And then it was all a whirlwind, really. It was pretty crazy.
Oh, that's unreal, bro. And obviously that side in 2015, world-class players. Who was your first roommate?
Oh, bro. My first roommate was DC, eh?
DC, Dan Carter.
Yeah.
The perfect 10.
Yeah, the perfect 10. It was crazy. Like, we were in Christchurch, and I remember, like, our group from the Highlanders were one of the first at the hotel. And so I was just like, oh, yeah, mean. They're like, yeah, your name's on the board. Just go look at it. And I was just like, oh, yeah, sweet. Room number 318. And then I seen Sopoanga and I was like, oh, man. And then, like, I went to walk off and I came back and I was like, oh, bro. And I had, like, you know, Sopoanga slash Carter. And I was just like, I didn't know what. And I was like, that's like your idol, you know? Like, and so I'm like, oh, I get in the room and I open the doors and I'm like, oh, bro, he's not here. So I kind of, like, I didn't pick a bed. Like, I just put my my stuff right in the middle. And I was like, bro, I don't know which bed he wants, you know, like. Bro, this guy's played like 100 games. I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, this is my bed. So I just like put all my stuff in the middle. And it didn't come for ages, eh? So I didn't like sit on any of the beds. I just sat in the chair on the desk and I just was like in my room. And then he finally came and then he's like, oh, bro, you should just pick any bed. Like, take that one. I was like, oh, sweet. So I took that one. And yeah, it was pretty cool. He was my first roommate.
What a moment, man. You would have, so you moved on and you played 16 caps for the All Blacks. Can you give us one of your most memorable moments playing for the All Blacks? And also, you know, we also hear about the traditions that are involved with the All Blacks camp and one of your most favorite traditions within the camp.
Oh, my first test has to be my most memorable one because we're in South Africa and like New Zealand, South Africa, you know, like that's quite an iconic test match. We're in Joburg too, so you're at altitude. You're playing at like Ellis Park. You know, it's the same ground where South African All Blacks played the 95 World Cup. You know, like, it's, like, iconic. So I'm sitting there on a Tuesday and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just going to watch this test this week. And Fozzie, who's the All Blacks coach now, we have, a 10s meeting. And he's like, right, boys, Lima, you're starting this week. Bodie on the bench. And Connor say, yeah, you're not in the 23. And I'm just, like, sitting there, like, bro, are you crazy? Like, usually when you give a debut, you know, you get the young fella to come off the bench and just ease your way in. But they were like, nah, bro, jump into the fire and see if you can handle it. So that was probably my favorite one.
You started number 10.
Yeah.
For the All Blacks.
Started number 10. It was crazy. Like, had Aaron Smith at 9, Maya at 12, Conrad at 13, Charles Pietel on one wing. Richie McCaw starting at 7.
Damn.
You know, stop like, it.
That is stacked.
Kieran Reid at 8. I was actually more nervous during the week because they made me stand up and like present game plans and stuff. And I'm like standing there in my head, like presenting, thinking, bro, I played 0 games. And you're trying to get me to tell these guys who have played like 100 tests what we're going to do this weekend. I'm just like, bro, this doesn't make sense. Like, make it make sense. That for me would be the best one. And then one of my favorite traditions in the All Blacks is every Tuesday we do a club night. So you get to wear like your club jersey of the club that you play for, your childhood club. And we sort of have like raffles, like real cool prizes. So at the start of like a tour, that's like kind of like think prizes because we're like trying to like build up the kitty to buy better prizes. So it might be like first prize might be like headphones, like a little speaker. And then people back then, it was like, whichever country we were, it was like €5 a ticket. And the more tickets you buy and the more money that you spend, goes in to the kitty and they just use that money to get better and better prizes. So as the tour goes on, bro, you got like 60-inch TVs, you got like free beer for a year, you got like flights to the Cook Islands, you know, like, bro, and then you'll get like a massive cash prize and it'll be like 5,000 euros or 5,000 pounds cash. And that's one of my favorite nights in the All Blacks, like, because we have the Wednesday off, so get guys who, you know, have a few beers, and some of the boys who really enjoy wine will teach some of us about wine, and we'll try different wines at dinner and stuff like that. That would probably be one of my favorite times in the All Blacks.
Did you end up winning any of them prizes?
Yeah, I won a few prizes, eh? But I never won, like, the big ones, like... The massive, like, you always wanted to win the cash prize at the end of the tour. Like,
it'll be hard to take a 60-inch TV back on the plane.
Yeah, bro. You know, these guys got so many resources. They just, like, they'll be like, yeah, sweet. It'll turn up at your house. And then you go, you know, like, you're like, are you sure? And then, like, boom. Like, when you get back off tour, there's a 60-inch TV at your house. It's mental. It's cool.
Oh, man, I love hearing those stories. Obviously, growing up, wanting to be a Wallaby, and you hear those stories, but, you know, hearing it from, you know, the player's point of view, that's pretty cool. Shifting gears now, putting on the Manu Samoa jersey and representing Manu Samoa at the World Cup, how did that hit different to yourself and your family?
Oh, man, like, it's such an emotional time, and especially for me, like, someone who doesn't speak Samoan, and like my dad does, he's from Samoan. The only time he speaks to me in Samoan is... when he's angry, so I can understand when I'm getting told off. but yeah, it really is, you know, like every time we sing songs and things like that, it's just emotional. Like I get like quite teary even like thinking about it, because like I think a lot about, like, for a lot of us, like our grandparents, our, you know, for some, our parents, you know, migrated to New Zealand and Australia so that we could have better opportunities and to represent like our people and our cultures. It just hits different from, you know, like, don't get me wrong, playing for the All Blacks is amazing and it was always my dream as a kid, but to play for Samoa just hit different on so many different levels that like you can't really explain. And you know, I think like playing for the All Blacks, you can get the things that they have in terms of like resources if you have money. What you can't get in those island teams is the culture and the feel that you have when you're sitting there and listening to stories and songs. And I remember getting a text from my dad, and most island dads sort of aren't, you know, like big on emotions and things like that, you know. I remember getting a text and he read that I was starting against Ireland for my first test, and he's like, oh, proud of you, son, you know, like I cried tears of joy when I saw your name on the team sheet. I wish my dad was here to see this, you know, but that kind of stuff is like, yeah, you can't explain that until you're in these environments and just, yeah, it's pretty special, eh? It is truly, truly special. But yeah. On the flip side, it's pretty hard too, you know, like Samoans and Islanders can be pretty unforgiving if you don't play good, you know. They'll be the first ones to tell you your shit and they'll tear you down, you know. You'll see the comments are like, ah, fun, and then you play a good game and they're like, oh, they'll get their flags out and, you know, like it's cool.
No. They wear the heart on the sleeves, and that's, you know, at the end of the day, it's always love. But, bro, that's awesome to hear that that story of your dad and what that would have meant if your grandfather was there.
Yeah, lots of love to Uncle Lenny and the Sopawanga family. Hey, I know it wasn't an easy decision for yourself to, you know, make yourself available for the Manu Samoa. You were traveling from France to Japan with your family at the time. What made you make that decision to, you know, put your hand up for your nation?
Yeah, you know, first of all, just the support of my wife, you know, like obviously it was the difficult time. I had to go from France to Japan, and then I was only here for like 10 days, then I left again, you know, and it's like the hottest time of the months, like summertime here in Japan. It's pretty difficult. So, you know, I really have my wife to thank, like the sacrifices she made to, you know, I got 3 kids, 6, 4, and 2, to be in another foreign country, you know. It was without the love and support of her, I don't think I could have done it. But for me, it was just, you know, it's an opportunity that was given to us with the rules changing. And I know that we had a team that could do something special. And unfortunately, you know, like things didn't go our way, but yeah, it was just something I knew that I had to do after being involved with the Cook Islands rugby as a coach and watching my brothers and just feeling that love and what you feel when you play for the Ireland teams, they're really just as different. And so I just said to myself, you know, like, I've got my grandmother's still alive and she's pretty close to me and she's been in New Zealand 50 years. It was mainly for her and for my kids and my wife, you know, to show my daughters, you know, like, they've grown up all around the world, but, you know, part of them is still Samoan, you know, and just want to show them that, like, that's them too, and that's part of who they are as well.
Yeah, man, you've made the Samoan nation proud, especially in that last game.
So we just want to, obviously, you know, all the emotion, all the build-up, the way Samoa played in that game against England, it was special. And then now, you know, World Rugby have announced a new competition that's going to run in 2026, a bit more of a global calendar. You're pretty vocal on social media just about that post, how Tonga and Samoa have not been included in that format. They're still included in the Pacific Nations Cup, but it's not in that global one that we're hoping for. Can you go into a little bit more detail about that?
Yeah, so just if we strip it back, like, Samoa played 12 games between 2019 and 2023, between the World Cup. Like, the All Blacks play 14 in a year. Right. So just for example, we can't expect to get better, like, without playing those harder games. Like, look at Argentina, you know, in the rugby championship. Look at Japan over the years, who have played the All Blacks consistently, had lots of games against tier one teams. Like, they might not have won, and Argentina may not have won, but for example, when it came to the World Cup and they played us in a tight match, like, they had all that experience of playing in games against All Blacks, against Australia, against South Africa, where maybe they would have lost. But what they would have done is they would have learned. And all that experience, like, comes down and it helps you move forward. It helps you grow. Like, you're not necessarily always going to win, but if you're competing at those higher levels and playing these bigger games in front of 50,000, 60,000, you're only going to improve. And for me, this tournament, it locks us doesn't just lock out, like, the Pacific nations out. It locks out, you know, like, teams like Chile, Uruguay, Portugal, and you've seen what they bring to the table, like, what their flavor, you know, like, you start to, you know, even Spain, like, you start to get those countries up and better, you get the fans, like, combined, like, those countries make up, like, 80 million people. I know the islands are small in terms of numbers, but what they've given to the game in terms of the world game, like, it's crazy. Like, you look at all the teams around the world, like, right now, and, like, some of the best players, their heritage is Ireland. You look at the guys being nominated for best player in the world right now. Like, two of them are Samoan. You're talking about Bundy Aki and Ari, you know what I mean? So this tournament feels just like a little slap in the face that developing nations like ourselves can't get better, you know? Like, we're sort of left with crumbs, you know? It's just disheartening. And it's sad to see that world rugby just seemed to just want to, you know, lock us out. And to have no relegation until 2030, like, that's too long, man. Like,
yeah, it is. 100% it is. Way too long. Now, I'm 100% with you on that. Obviously, the Pacific regions have given so much to rugby. It deserves that platform, not for 2030. We're 2023. Like, why does it take so long to create that change? So hopefully we can, you know, sort that out soon. But we're going to finish on a lighter note. This is a quick fire question. Guess this coach. I'm just going to give a couple of quotes, all right? And I just want you to guess who he is. You probably know him really well. So, hey, mate, you're no good to me. I need men, not boys. Leaders? Do we have leaders? When you find me those leaders, we'll have a leadership meeting. Can you guess this coach I'm talking about?
You're no good to me. I only know one coach, and he said that to me many, many times. It's got to be Jamie Joe.
I'm good, Jakey. It is. I'm good, Jakey.
As you may notice, Sammy's a bit traumatized from Uncle Jamie Jones, but I told him, I said, actually, Lima was his golden child at the Highlanders.
I'm still hurting, but he told me I was no good to him a few times.
And that was a classic Jamie Joe quote, man. But like, every dude's got those, bro. Yeah. Every single person.
Oh,
like,
see, Aaron's feel so hurt, Sammy. It's all right. It's not just you.
When at the time, I thought it was just me, but realizing when I told that story, everyone had a Jamie Joe story, but
he's taking the pressure.
I want to thank you so much for your time. You're an inspiration to many, many Pacifica kids coming through and wanting to rep you know, not only where they live in terms of, you know, if it's Australia or New Zealand, but also to be able to have the courage to then step into and play for their heritage of Samoa, Tonga or Fiji. So we want to wish you all the best with the rest of your career. Much love, and hopefully we get to see you repping that blue jersey one more time.
Yeah, bro. Like I said, leaders lead and keep leading the way.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it, and appreciate all the support from everybody around the world, especially for Samoa and all the islands, you know. Appreciate it. Thanks, brothers.
Nisian knowledge.
Sammy, it is... You're on... How are you winning?
Mate, because Sefa took over that time, remember? And I got some easy questions.
Mate, Sef, what have you done to me? I'm sure I was up by at least 2 points. Anyways, you're on 9. I'm on 8.5.
You know, I reckon you could get 3 from 3 this week, T.
Beautiful.
Nah, it's not happening.
I will get at least one.
You'll get at least one.
And
okay.
Take the lead.
The first question's got to do with South Africa, though. But the Nisian influence that's been in South Africa and rugby over the years. Okay, so hopefully you're ready for this.
Here we go.
Here we go. Ben Tapuai, who is Samoan that has played for the Queensland Reds and the Wallabies. And we also have Epi Dione, a massive Tonga man that's played for the mighty Sea Eagles, as in the Ikaletahi, not the Manly Sea Eagles. Which South African province did they both play for? Is it A, the Cape Town Stormers? B, the Durban Sharks? C, the Johannesburg Lions? D, the Bloemfontein Cheetahs? Or E, Pretoria Blue Bulls.
Is there a F, G, H, I while you're at it?
Well, there. How many? Six there?
What?
You got a 1 in 6 chance.
3 or 4. I don't know any of them countries.
You don't know the Cape Town
Sorry,
storm.
The cities. Sorry, I'm just going to take a guess. How many? So we went up to E?
Yeah, so we got
A, B, C, D,
Cape Town. We got the Stormers, Sharks, Lions, Cheetahs, or Bulls.
I'm going to go with I can see the future. C.
And I see that you will be wrong. It is the Durban Sharks.
Cool question, man.
Oh, don't be salty. Cool, don't you cool dare question, be salty.
Man. I thought we were doing it for our listeners.
It is. They knew that. Like everyone in the Solomons at PNG, they knew this answer.
No, they did not.
They did. They told me. This is one of the listener questions. Perfect.
Durban Sharks.
The Durban Sharks. Well, there we go. Next one. Fiji Butty won 43-16 over the Kumuls.
Yes.
What was the halftime score?
Oh, that's a good question.
See?
That's a good one.
You like that.
So, the Fiji Kumuls.
Hey, hang on. You can't, whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, I'm just seeing the full-time score. okay, so you must have missed that goal then on Alex Johnston's try. So it was 4, and I believe they had, let me think quickly. I'm going 18-4.
Bro. You were so close. If you added the field goal, it would have been 19-4.
Oh, you're joking.
Very close. I forgot the field goal.
Yes, he kicked it right before the halftime bell.
There it is. Okay, here we go. Last question. You should know this one, bro. If you don't know this, there's someone that's going to be really disappointed. Lima made his Samoan debut against Ireland, but where was it played? Was it played in Ravenhill, Belfast in Ireland, Stade de France, Bayonne in France, or Whalen Reserve, Western Sydney?
Well, it was in France. I'm going to go... Oh, you done B last time, so I'll go C. Bayonne de France, is that what it is?
Bayonne de France. Yeah. No, just Bayonne.
Bayonne.
And Bayonne, you are correct.
Yes. So I take the lead. 9.5. Let's go.
Do you take the lead? I thought... No.
9.5 plays 9. I would take the lead.
9.5 plays 9.
See you next week.
Oh, look at you. Oh, get that tone up, son. Get some energy into it. But, well, thank you all for listening again. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes, been some pressure.
Yeah, it's been a lot of pressure. But we'll see you all next week on ABC Radio Australia or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ka kite to all our listeners. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.